Okay, so now I've given you a lot. Now I hope we'll get some questions from you about what I've said or what I haven't said. So, who is going to be brave enough to ask the first question? We have, yes. Okay, the benefits of directing your thoughts to the benefits of letting go of your thoughts. If you're skilled at directing your thoughts, you can use that at the beginning of a meditation. So sometimes we have things like metta meditation, to direct your thoughts on metta. But really, it's only at the very beginning which you can use those. You have to really, the deeper you get in meditation, the more important it is to let it go. And don't direct anything at all. Because if you're directing things, you know, I'm supposed to be what we call the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. But actually sometimes, as a joke, they call me spiritual dictator of the Buddhist Society. Because you start off as a director and then you dictate. You become the control freak again. It's very, very hard to direct. I don't know if you drove yourself here, sir, or whether someone else drove you, but if you're in the back of the car, how many people are backseat drivers? Saying, drive, go this way, go that way, don't go too fast, don't go too slow, don't cut in, don't do that. So people, sometimes in meditation, you're backseat drivers. Please do not do that. Thank you so much for the first question. Yes. Ah, my good old friend. Nice to see you again.
I'm watching, listening how you're emphasizing kindness. 2 weeks ago at Wat Nanacha, when you spoke with the monks, you spoke about kindness being the antidote to ill will. And tonight, I have a sense that you've expanded it further in that what I think that I heard is that kindness is necessary in order to let go, and that unless one develops kindness, that there's a blockage in your path in the Dhamma. And so if that's true, if that's what you were saying, I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. That kindness, this is a nice story, that there was a Singapore girl coming, stay at my monastery, doing a meditation retreat. She came and said she had a wandering mind. When she meditated, her mind was thinking about all sorts of different things. And so I told her a story about a disciple in Perth who, when she was very, very young, maybe about 5 or 6 years of age, had an argument with her mummy. She was very upset with her mother, and so this little six-year-old said, "Mum, I don't love you anymore. I want to leave home." Now this was a very clever mother. She said, "Okay, darling, I'll help you pack." So together, the mother and a little six-year-old went into her bedroom, packed her little suitcase, and the mother made her some sandwiches, took her to the door, and waved her little child goodbye. "Have a nice life." Now that was, that was a very smart woman who knew child psychology. The little six-year-old just walked to the end of the street, and by that time was already homesick, turned around and came back again. And when I told this to this Singapore girl, she was, no, very disrespectfully, she was rolling and laughing on the floor. I said, "What are you doing that for?" She said, she did exactly the same in Singapore. When she was about 5 years old, she had an argument with her mother, said, "I'm going to leave." And so again, the mother said, "Okay, pack your bags." But in Singapore, the mother was too busy to make sandwiches. She just gave her a $20 note to buy her own lunch. And living in an apartment, the little six-year-old went into the elevator, got down to the bottom, and that's when she was homesick, and pressed the button to her floor again. And the mother was waiting for the elevator. She knew what would happen and came back again. Now that's called kindly letting go. In that simile, your mind is like that little five-year-old or six-year-old. "I can't stand you any longer, I'm leaving. Wander here, wander there." Let it go. If your mind wants to wander, help pack its bag and give it $20 for its journey. In other words, you're kind to it. And this is like, you know, in the West we might call this reverse psychology. But it's incredibly powerful. If you're kind to the mind, you want to go thinking, off you go, that's fine. One of my key experiences, in my sixth range retreat as a monk, I was found a nice place up in the mountains above Chiang Mai, Medang district, close to the little village of Bang Gert. It was a tea picking village. It was so peaceful and so beautiful. It was a perfect place to meditate. But I was by myself there. And after the first few weeks, I was meditating quite well at the first start of the Pansa, the range retreat. But after about 3 or 4 weeks, my mind started getting very restless. And very restless. And I started to think about what I call unmonkish thoughts. I think you can all know what those unmonkish thoughts were. You know, old girlfriends, you know, romance, sex. And I didn't want a thing like that. I want to be a good monk. So I tried to stop my mind. But as soon as I stopped it, all these thoughts kept coming back again. And I had no one to talk to. And no one to get advice from. And being by yourself in a situation like this, it got actually worse and worse. And I thought I was going crazy. And so one day, I was getting so sort of stuffed up in my head with all these thoughts of sex and romance, I went to the Buddha statue in the main hall, bowed 3 times, and basically said, help. You know the thought which came into my mind? It was just saying, because I was, you know, Westerner, said, let's do a deal. And the deal was this. For most of the day, I will stay with my breath, but I give myself an hour every afternoon from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. when I can think anything. The most unmonkish thoughts, sex, romance, old girlfriends, I'd allow myself to think those things from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every day. That was fair enough. Mind, if you want to do that, that's your playtime. The rest of the time you behave. But you know what happened? It was just as tough as ever trying to get my mind to stay with the breath instead of thinking all these sexual thoughts. When it got to 3 p.m., I was just so tired fighting with my mind. I went up to my hut, leaned against the wall, put my feet out because I was tired, and said, okay, now you can do whatever you want. Sex, most deviant fantasy, go for it. And for the next hour, my mind watched every breath without any problem. Not one wanton thought came in my mind. And that was just an amazing experience, but I learned from that the difference between letting go and trying to let go. The reason I was thinking those unmonkish thoughts, because I was trying to control my mind, and I was not being kind to it at all. When you're kind and gentle to your mind will be kind and gentle to you. If you do violence to your mind and are aggressive towards it and unforgiving, the mind is not going to treat you well. You should treat your mind like you would treat your best friend. Not as your slave, but as your friend. So I know how to be kind to my mind. If it's tired, you can be tired. And then it doesn't get tired very long. If you want to think, you can think, and it doesn't want to think then. I'm so kind to my mind. My mind wants to hang out with me rather than going somewhere else. So it is actually a very important question and a very important point. One of the main reasons why people have difficulty with meditation is because they try and control their mind rather than being kind to it. You get quick results by being aggressive, but those results don't last very long. Kindness, at first it's harder. You don't seem to be getting so deep at first. But the long term is far, far, far more effective. So please put heaps and heaps and heaps of kindness in your meditation. Be kind to your mind. And your mind will be kind to you. Does that answer the question? There's one behind. Okay, and then you, sir, next.
สการหลวงพ่อค่ะ it appears to me that when you were talking about when you were teaching us how to meditate earlier about be aware of observing the feelings of feet and my thighs and you know all the body parts and combining with all other methods breathtaking and all the stuff your methods today had appeared to me that it's a very thin line that I felt that I was falling asleep but that it was but I was aware I was aware of that I always have this
So don't worry if you fall asleep when you're meditating. Because it's just the result of old karma. You've been working so hard, you've been using your brain so much, you have to be kind and allow your brain to go to sleep. Please don't fight it.
Okay.
Because again, as a young monk in the northeast of Thailand, I had a lot of trouble with sloth and torpor as a young monk. And I would fight that sloth and torpor and the dullness. And sometimes I'd break through. But as soon as I broke through my sleepiness, I'd be restless. I'd have too many thoughts. So I'd try and calm down the thoughts and fall asleep again. It was like a pendulum. From sleepiness to restlessness, going to the two extremes, but never finding the middle. And it took me a long time to realize that it was the striving, the struggling against my sleepiness which was the problem. Afterwards, I realized what I was doing. In those monasteries, we'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We were malnourished because the food in the east side in those days was just so poor. Many of us were sick. I remember actually that just the year I became a monk, I think the Queen of England and the Duke of Edinburgh came to Bangkok and they got a few of the Western monks, I think to Wat Bawon, and the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip, saw them all. And his response was, I've never seen such a thin, anemic bunch of blokes in my life. Because you know, we did have a very tough life as Westerners. So there I was, malnourished, in a climate I wasn't used to, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, trying to sleep only 4 hours a night. It was obvious that you should be tired. You were sleep deprived, food deprived, climate sort of challenged. It was not my fault. The same as it was not your fault, you were sleepy because you've had a busy day. But now I know that if I do feel tired, I just leave it alone. I don't struggle with it because I've only got so much mental energy. And my mental energy is tired. I just keep as what you are doing, as mindful as you can, but without struggling. And you find the energy comes back again. By being still, by not struggling or fighting, you get natural energy, comes back into the mind. You do wake up. And then, instead of going to restlessness, you're in the middle of this beautiful, mindful peacefulness. Once, the Buddha was walking with his attendant, Ananda, in the forest. And there they saw a monk sitting perfectly straight, meditating. Perfect posture. And the Buddha turned around and smiled and said to Ananda, I'm worried about that monk. 2 weeks later, that monk disrobed and got married. The same day, in a different part of the forest, he saw another monk nodding all over the place. And the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled and said, I'm not worried about him. 2 weeks later, he was enlightened with psychic powers. So maybe another 2 weeks, lady, and maybe you might be enlightened with... Now that was like a story which I couldn't understand at first, but I realized now that what the Buddha was seeing that monk sitting so straight, he was a control freak, that monk. He was forcing his body to be erect and trying to control his mind, and you can't survive like that. And so after a while you get depressed, frustrated, so go off and get married, I can't get enlightened. But the other monk was learning how to let go. And it was only a matter of time when you really learn how to let go. Sure, you're tired at first, it's just nature. But after a while, when that tiredness goes, because you're not struggling and striving, after a while you get so peaceful. And when you know how to not to struggle against things, how to keep just aware without doing things, that peace turns into bliss, bliss to enlightenment. That's how it works. So please, if you are tired when you're meditating, there's some natural reason for that. A lot of it is because you are all sleep deprived. Because, you know, you don't get to sleep enough. You work hard, you struggle to survive. That's why whenever I teach a retreat, a meditation retreat, just building a retreat center, the first 3 days of a 9-day retreat, I encourage people to sleep a lot. I call it flat-out meditation. Because they need to do that. There's this one lady from Sydney, one of the retreats I gave many, many years ago, an executive. She was working late in her office, I don't know, until 7, 8 o'clock. So she came to the retreat late. She checked in and I said, go to bed. And I told her, look, for the next 3 days, I want you to sleep a lot. And she did that. All the other people were up at 4 o'clock in the morning meditating, and she was sleeping. But she got up for breakfast, and then she went to bed again afterwards. And all the other people who had a dormitory were complaining about her. Look, why is she going on a retreat for? She's just sleeping all the time. I said, no, she's got my permission. The other people were complaining because they were jealous. In the first 3 days, she hardly did any meditation at all. She caught up on her sleep with my full permission. The next 3 days, she actually caught up with everybody else. In 3 days, she got as far as the other people had got in 6 days. The last 3 days, she took off. She was way above everybody else. She was a star of the retreat. And I often mention her because she knew how to let go and just work with her body rather than against it. She was not the control freak. So there's a question from the gentleman there next. Thank you for that question. It's a really great question. So if you are sleepy, you're going to be a great meditator. Well done.
Thank you very much for giving me a chance to ask. Let's come back to the forgiveness. No doubt about the usefulness of the forgiveness. But what do you think when it was used along with the forgive, not forget? Okay. Does it mean that we don't let it go by keeping the not forget?
Okay, forgiveness or forgetfulness. It is true that to forget is sometimes not wise. To forgive is actually taking away the pain from the experience and having the experience, you know, as a learning tool, something which we can remember, maybe use to remind ourselves that when we don't forgive, we feel so much pain. We don't forget, but we try and investigate. I remember I told this story in Singapore. One of my best friends, the friend who was my best friend at school, grew up together, still keep in contact. He became a school teacher after finishing university. But he wanted to do something good for the poor people. So he chose a comprehensive school in Wandsworth in South London, one of the toughest schools in London. And he told me that one day, in the morning, when his class came into the classroom, one of the boys spat at him, actually on the floor just by his feet. So my friend Keith said, clean that up. And this boy used the F word, F off. So go straight to the principal. And the principal came back afterwards, maybe 2 or 3 hours, with his arm around this boy. And told him, do you realize what just happened last night? This boy's father just savagely beat his mother. And the whole family has been destroyed. And this boy is devastated, hardly slept all night about what had happened. It's not excusable, but it's understandable why that 11, 12-year-old boy was so distraught at seeing the mother he loved so much being beaten so badly by his father. And that's why he did that. Sometimes, when we get angry or upset about what someone did to us, maybe we can investigate and find, why did they do that? And a lot of times, if we do get deeper into the problem, it makes it far easier not just to forgive, but to learn. To learn how to move on. Not just us, but them as well. Sometimes the anger we think is a solution, but it's not getting at the heart of things. So we forgive, but we learn and sometimes investigate and find out what's causing this, why? Why do people do these things to each other? And I can understand as a kid. Now I had a very loving mother and loving father, but it's hard for me to imagine, I have to really stretch it, but imagine what it would be like, the mother you loved, being savagely beaten by your father. I don't know what I would do as an 11-year-old going to school the next morning. Anyway, so next question. Yes? Okay, you say you go to work in the morning, you've only got 10 minutes to meditate. If I just let go, my mind wanders all over the place, I waste those 10 minutes. It's not really a wasting the 10 minutes. What I would suggest to you, if you've only got 10 minutes, just make peace with every moment. In other words, don't try and control every moment. You know, the book which I wrote, Opening the Door of Your Heart, it comes from a story from my father who took me aside and said, son, whatever you do in your life, the door of my heart will always be open to you, whatever you do. And that's sometimes, if I've only got 10 minutes to meditate, that's what I say to my mind. Mind, whatever you want to do, the door of my heart is open to you right now. We call that unconditional mindfulness, with some kindness as well. And you find because you're making peace with your mind, you build up peace. It is actually, if you do it properly, 100%, it's an incredibly effective, fast way of getting into deep states of meditation very quickly. You're making peace. The only reason why the mind does wander is because you're not making peace with it. You're just getting involved in it. You want it to do this, do that, and that's why it keeps moving. You just leave it alone. Mind, the door of my heart is open to you. You kindly just, if you want to do that, that's fine by me. And your mind just doesn't want to leave you because it's such a wonderful person to be with. Your mind just doesn't want to go. Okay, next question. How long can we go on for, Noon? Can we keep on going on for a long time? For those of you who do want to leave because you've got to go back, monks are the hardest people in the world to offend. So please, if you need to go back, you don't need to feel like Greng Jai. Please, you can get up and go. It's fine. Yes, sir. Question over there. Yes. Okay, you're feeling lousy, had a terrible day. Everything is... Have you... Was every part of that day lousy? So you've just been collecting the shit from the day. Suddenly, oh dear, I was brought all the shit home. Deliberately think of something nice which happened that day. Or if not that day, the day before. Something which inspires you. That's why sometimes people, if they had a really lousy day, you get these beautiful relaxation tapes. Or something, just gets you in a good mood before you start really watching the breath. or going into a deeper meditation, just relax first of all. Look at something which inspires you. You know, that's why that sort of for the Buddhists, like the Thai Buddhists, sometimes they just chant Buddho or they do a tippy so, something which inspires them and uplifts them. One thing you can do is a skillful means which I developed. If you had a very, very lousy day and you want to meditate, sit down, just relax the body as best you can. And remind yourself of the most peaceful experience you've ever had in your life so far. Recall the happiest moment you've had. And when you recall the happiest moment, then fill in the details. Where was that? Who were you with? Imagine the scenery around that happiest, most peaceful moment. What was the temperature like? What was the weather? What was the season? Fill in all the details, you know, with your thinking mind. And as you think more and more about that happiest, most beautiful, peaceful experience, you're actually reinforcing the memory of that happiness. And do that for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, deliberately recording, filling all the details of the happiest experience you've had so far in your life. And then, 3 or 4 minutes, you have happiness, and you can start meditating then. It's a very skillful technique. Because when you're focusing on negativity, that's all you see. But when you deliberately develop the happiest moment in your life, the mind turns in the opposite direction, starts to see happiness. And it's easier to meditate then. But please, 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 that days aren't awful. There are some things which happen in a day which are awful. There's no such thing in life as a terrible day. There are just terrible things which happen that day. So a bit of positive psychology and then all those terrible days, where are they gone? So thank you for that question anyway. Did it answer it enough? Any other questions? Okay, this is your last chance. Not very often. Actually, we're getting the donations going. I'll tell a donation story. This is a story of the spider. You know, once there was a suicidal spider. This spider, as soon as he was born, he went to a corner of a house in Bangkok and he built a wonderful web. He put his heart and soul into this wonderful web, his house. And as soon as he built his house, a maid came along and destroyed it. Imagine that was your apartment or house. You worked all that long time to buy, and as soon as you bought it, someone destroyed it. But it's even worse for a spider because that's its source of food. So the very first house this spider built was destroyed, and he went hungry as well. So he went into the next house, built another web, and it just was finished, but before anything landed in it to eat, and the owner of the house came and destroyed it again. The next house, the same thing happened. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 houses. And every house he built, every web he built was destroyed before he had time to eat. And after doing that 8 times, he gave up. What's the point? Every time I build a house, it's destroyed. It's just bad karma being a spider. And he felt so hungry, so thin, he started crying. He was one depressed spider. And there he was going, crying, thin, hungry, alone, contemplating suicide. He was looking for somebody with heavy boots on to crawl underneath to be squashed on purpose. And as he was crawling along, sad, depressed, desperate, he came along a fat spider. And there was a fat spider sunning himself, smiling, the most jolly, fattest spider you'd ever seen. And a fat spider said to suicidal spider, "Why are you crying for?" And suicidal spider said, "Life is so unfair. I built all these All these houses have been destroyed. I've never had anything to eat. I feel so rejected. But the suicidal spider saw this fat spider, said, doesn't that happen to you? And the fat spider said, me, no. Where I live, no one ever disturbs me. That's why I'm so fat. I built one home and I'm happy there. So how can you build a home somewhere in Bangkok where no one disturbs you? And suicide, the big fat spider said, I built my home in the monastery donation box. No one ever... no one ever disturbs you there. So, I tell that story in different temples as a fundraiser. And churches use that as well. There's a safest place for a spider to build its web. Okay, so if there's no more questions, is it right time to finish off now, or should we keep going? Is it time to go, or? Okay, because I know there's busy traffic, and many of you have been here till 6 o'clock. Have you got a question? Okay, last question, then we can go. Oh, you're taking down bees or spiders? Bees. Okay, you're taking down the bees from somewhere. Okay. Well, if you are taking down the bees from somewhere, say, bees, may you be happy and well somewhere else. In other words, yeah, I think that, yes, if it's a bird, no problem, but bees or something like that, that obviously that sometimes if the bees, or if they're very dangerous, and if they sort of are going to be hurting, say, your children or something else, to see if the kindest you can possibly do to try and remove them, and if they can't actually remove them, or if once they are removed, make sure that there's no place they can nest again, trying to protect it. So, now sometimes we are put in that situation, we really have hardly any choice at all. But to not just be reactive, be proactive. In other words, if you have cockroaches in your kitchen, try and keep the kitchen clean, try and make sure there's no spaces or gaps they can come into your house. And the same with anything else like mice. The only reason mice come into houses or rats is because you're not clean enough and there's too many gaps. There's all sorts of other things you can do. It takes sometimes more time. You know, like in our monastery in Chithurst, where Ajahn Sumedho lived, they had lots of rabbits in that monastery. And usually you're supposed to kill the rabbits, but they were Buddhist monks. We can't kill the rabbits. But their neighbors were farmers and say, look, these rabbits are using your monastery for sanctuary during the day. And they're going out at night and eating all our crops. And before we catch them, they're going to the monastery again to sleep at night. Very clever rabbits. And so what actually the solution was, they said they couldn't kill the rabbits. But what they did, they spent a lot of money putting a rabbit fence around the monastery. Not to keep the rabbits out, but to keep them in. And people said, you're crazy spending all that money, but said, no, it's worth it being kind. They said, your temple's going to get overrun with rabbits. But that was many years ago, and the rabbits have actually managed to just to get the population just right, not too many, not too less. I think it's because they listen to the sermons about keeping 8 precepts every one prayer. Yes, go on. I couldn't quite hear that. Could someone else repeat that for me? Could you understand? Those living were closer to you could maybe hear it. Okay, so sorry about that, but it was a bit too far away to hear. Okay, bye-bye, Venables. Bye-bye. Yeah, sorry, because I couldn't quite catch what you said. Yeah.
Pajan, and thank you very much. At the very beginning of your speech, you talk about one Singaporean person telling you that you can speak in such a way, you can behave in such a way because you are a monk. And with that, I try to tell you that throughout our life, we have been challenged by people all around us. How did you react and respond to that person?
Okay, how I respond to that person who challenged me. It's wonderful actually being a monk in Western country like Australia, because people challenge you there all the time because they don't respect you like in Bangkok. And it's wonderful being challenged because it really keeps you sharp and it keeps you on the edge. One of the most challenging questions I ever got was from a 13-year-old in a high school in Perth who asked me the question. I've been a monk for about 10 years. He said, "Well, do girls still turn you on then?" That was the hardest question I've ever had to face. But fortunately, one of the other girls in the class said, "Stop embarrassing us." But how you actually, number one, you're honest, and you face the question directly, but a lot of times, one of Ajahn Chah's great tricks was, you don't answer the question, you answer the questioner. In other words, where they're coming from, why are they asking that question, what do they really want to ask? And if you answer the questioner rather than the question, sometimes you get deeper and they're very happy with what you said. So remember, sometimes people challenge you because they're trying to test you and trying to find out what you're made of. And sometimes, one of the best answers is, "I don't know." You know, people really respect you if you just say, "Well, I don't know that, that's beyond my experience." Because then they respect your honesty. And that's such an important thing for any teacher, school teacher, monk teacher, or any teacher in a university, just to be honest enough to say, "Well, I don't know that yet, but maybe you can go and ask somebody else." Or even in life with your partner, say, "I just don't know." Because that honesty is at the heart of truth. Without any honesty, where is there any truth? So when you're challenged, if you don't know, say you don't know. If they ask you a deeper question, you say thank you and try and see if you can find out what the answer is. But that's why sometimes I think it would be much better if Thai Buddhists were a bit more disrespectful to their monks, to challenge them more, because that would keep the monks on their toes and it would mean that they would have a better quality of monks to serve the people in Thailand. Yeah, and that comes from a Chow Kun, so you can quote me. Yes? Oh, that's actually supposed to be the last question, so... Okay, one more question, two more questions. Okay. If you want to go, just slip out. Okay, one more question. That has to be the very, very, very last question, then we can get up. Yes?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because sometimes we as a human, we usually have a flashback of the bad thoughts or bad events come back to your mind again and again, and it's easy to say so, then done, like let it go, you have to stop thinking, but it's actually it's not easy. So do you have any like shortcut ways to stop that thinking?
Yeah, it's called substitution. So when you think really nice thoughts, then the bad thoughts don't have a space to get in. So you cultivate the memory of the positive, good, kind, wonderful things. So that way that, you know, the bad thoughts, the bad memories, they don't have a chance to actually to get a foothold in your mind. You know, really what happens, that those thoughts, they don't just come by themselves. You actually invited it in. And the reason you invited it in, because you were feeling in a bad mood. There's a slight bit of negativity there, which allows those negative thoughts to get a foothold in your mind. You have a positive mind, a happy mind, and you actually deliberately cultivate the good memories of your past and the good memories of your partner, the good memories of your parents. The bad memories get less and less and less. And they just, after a while, they just don't come in anymore. So the answer to your question is by cultivating the positive memories of your past. And then the bad ones, they just disappear. Okay, so thank you for listening before everybody goes, and I'm just talking to myself. Do you want to sort of wrap up the evening? Yeah, we can close up now. If anyone wants to stay behind, I'll be here for another half hour or more. We can just have personal chat. Okay, so that's the formal part of the evening over. If you have any personal questions, you can please come up and ask them. I'll be at the front here. So take care. And as you go home, please don't do anything I wouldn't do.